Do you feel too full after meals like your digestion could use a little support? Try Bitterex from Quiksilver Scientific. Bitterex is a blend of botanical bitter extracts designed to support healthy digestion and your body's natural digestive processes. Bitter herbs have been used for centuries to support digestive function, helping stimulate digestive activity. Just a few pumps before meals make Quiksilver Scientific's Bitterex easy to add to your routine. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to Zen Samich, a podcast for the independent mind and anyone who embraces life despite its absurdities. Join former attorney and professor turned Japanese papermaker Mark Reed each week as he talks with creative, inspiring, and influential people. Or as he shares his own research to help make your world a little better today than it was yesterday.
Hey, quick shout out to this episode's sponsor. You got to go check out mandatetoelevate.com. There's a writing course there that will take you all the way from an aspiring writer to becoming a publisher's favorite. There's also a 4-week mentorship program called Path to Confidence. There are books. There's a free affirmation exercise, a gratitude journal, also free. Byron and Mariah Edgington have put something together that is designed to make you a better person, a more confident person. And that's their mandate, to elevate you. Mandatetoelevate.com. Go check it out. That is also in the show notes. Loyal listeners to this show will know that I get around a good bit, but my guest today, well, his travelography, I don't know if that's a word. I think it is. It is now. It puts mine to shame. Earl Bridges is a TV host. He and his childhood friend, Craig Martin, travel around the world and the U.S. on a PBS TV show called The Good Road. And folks, here are just a few of the locales I'm talking about. Thailand, Cuba, Myanmar, Zanzibar, Kenya, not to mention all across the U.S., Cape Canaveral, Nashville, Richmond, New York City, and he's done an episode in Puerto Rico, and even in my sweet home of Alabama. But he's not just a gonzo traveler journalist, my favorite title of his. He wears a lot of hats. He's a speaker, a whiskey lover. That's my second favorite title of his. A beekeeper, a story brand coach. Along the way, he has started several tech companies, served on the board of some nonprofits. In his own words, he is a man led by his curiosity and heart. He is, on top of all that, a philanthropologist. There you go. That's the term he coined. And supposing you don't know what that is yet, a philanthropologist is someone who travels the world unearthing stories about people that are doing good without any concern for their own well-being. On The Good Road, he and Craig introduce audiences to inspiring folks who look at the world's most impossibly difficult problems with the attitude, hey, I can help. I can't tell you how much I love that. He joins me now from Charleston, South Carolina, and remarkably not via satellite phone from the Ugandan bush or somewhere, you know, in the far reaches of the planet. Welcome to Zen Samich, Earl Bridges.
Thanks, Mark. You actually caught me between trips. I just got back from Balochistan, which is the western part of Pakistan, last week, and I'm headed to Cuba in 2 days. So I happen to be, when I'm at home, I'm here in home in downtown Charleston, and I couldn't find a better place to be.
That's awesome. I knew I did catch you. Like, I think we scheduled this. I'm like, are you available in this 30-minute time slot? Are you in between countries? So I appreciate you making the time, man, so much.
No, are you kidding me? This is great. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Well, you're living my dream life, man. And it's not just because all the places you've been and traveled. That's awesome. But it's what you do, the stories you find that is so compelling. To give the listener an idea, I could have crafted an entire interview on any single episode of The Good Road. Right. I want to ask you about, you know, talking to the inmate in a Thai prison, you know, or the punk band in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. I'll try to rein it all in like this. Why? Why do you do what you do? How did it start? How did it come together? Yeah, how do you find your story? That should get us through 30 minutes right there. Just answer those three.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what. I think, like everybody, I was inspired by this guy named Anthony Bourdain. And you talk about living, you know, that life. I thought, here's a guy that gets to travel around the world and meet some of the most interesting people and get mixed up, have some whiskeys and some bar in the middle of nowhere and get some interesting stories. And reality is my life is messy and complicated, as I think most of our lives are.
Sure.
And the subtext of the good road has always been the messy business of global philanthropy, only because doing good, a lot of times you do too much, and it's sometimes it's better for you to just stay out of the way. And so I grew up as a kid, son of an Air Force pilot. My dad was an Air Force pilot during the Vietnam War. When Saigon fell in September 75, I was a fifth grader in Bangkok, Thailand. My dad was flying in and out of Hanoi bombing. And it's a weird thing because he shifted from that and became a missionary afterwards. And then I spent my high school years when he went back to Thailand as a missionary kid. And yeah. I always say that I was the kid, not the missionary, because I'm not a great representative of the church, hell of any church. but that's that curiosity of just trying to figure out how do you help people along the way and what are those stories and what keeps you going. And early on, if you're working with the church around it, you're constantly around poor people and not trying to figure out what makes a difference and what helps and who am I and you know all the different things that we struggle with. So the story that we're most interested in is always those things that cause you to sit down and think, yeah, I didn't see that coming. And yeah. Now I've changed. Something has changed inside of me. So the format is just that simple as that.
Okay.
You brought up the really one of my favorite episodes, because I think that Myanmar episode with the punk band really characterizes what we were trying to do with the story overall. We wanted to go and film in Burma. We had a lot of friends in high school that had been Burmese refugees. But when we went over there and some people that were working, there's another really good episode called the Free Burma Rangers with some old missionary kids that are doing some crazy shit in northern Thailand and in that. But how do you talk about a really complex place? How do you talk about a place that's, you know, plagued by the Rohingya crisis? You had all of the aspirational, you know, it's going to be the next big democracy. Mm-hmm. And then how do you tell about a place that, you know, and overcome whatever tropes that people thought they knew of Myanmar or Burma? So right. We found this punk rock band and hell, I didn't think we were going to find a punk rock band in Myanmar. I mean, a super conservative Buddhist on one hand, and it's an oppressive military government on the other. But these are the guys that are out there holding up their three fingers on the front lines saying, you know what, F the government. And you know, all of this, and they're the ones that are connected to the street community. They're the ones that are feeding the poor kids. They're the ones that are raising money and doing, you know, kind of cool stuff. And I was like, this is exactly the show. It's this amazing. Is that surprising good that you never saw coming.
Yeah. How did it start with, tell us about Craig and your friendship. Like
I've known Craig most of my life. Craig was a Southern Baptist missionary kid. And when I went back, I was, it seems so far away, but my family was a Church of Christ denomination. So, and it's weird. We're so sticklers for all these little things. And Craig and I used to have these endless debates about whether or not he as a Southern Baptist was going to go to heaven, which truth be told, I don't think he is. but we always had these like philosophical, religious kind of what is life kind of conversations. About 6 years ago or 7 years ago, I had a software company called Good Done Great. And we were working with really big companies on their corporate social responsibility, the giving that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And we had had 50 of the biggest brands in the world that were clients. So we had Toyota, AIG, Capital One, Whole Foods. We had the most loved company, Whole Foods, and the most hated company as a client, Monsanto. Mm-hmm. And in that, we had 3.5 million employees that we were trying to encourage to get involved, care about their communities, and give back. But we couldn't get these 3.5 million employees, these users of our system, really fired up about some of the causes. And so we thought, you know what, visual storytelling, let's do something like Craig said, who was a filmmaker. Craig said, let's do this Bourdain, you know, let's do Bourdain meets Vice with a Heart.
Yeah.
And let's tell stories about Batman and not Superman. And let's just allow it to be as authentic as it can.
I love
and
that
formula. We hit the road with another friend, went to Myanmar, Nepal, through Thailand, Vietnam, started filming a couple of stories, created a sizzle, and then we got a ton of interest from it. And that's the whole thing. That's how it started.
How did you approach PBS, or did they approach you? Or I don't know how that works. with a public?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. The whole story is something I could tell you a whole business story on that. But the way it works with PBS, the beauty of it is that PBS, you own your IP. So we create content. We own our content.
Nice.
We distribute it through U.S. only broadcast rights. And so what that means is because we own our show, as soon as it goes out on TV in the U.S., that's the only area that we're precluded from for two years to redistribute. But we can go straight to the BBC, and we do. We have distribution deals in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, other places. And I could put it out on Delta Airlines, you know, so we run the in-flight, entertainment with Delta for years. That was great. And that's a great model if you already have money or sponsors. It's that old thing of how do you make a small fortune in PBS. But because I had worked with a lot of big brands, we got some big sponsors. And now over the years, we've had Toyota, Bank of America, AMD, Advanced Micro Devices. And those guys subsidize the production. We maintain rights. So we got some interest from, like CNN and some other places early on at Discovery and Nat Geo. Everyone was interested in the show. But I don't know if you know, Craig and I are not the best looking young people that you could put on television. If we gave it up, they would have had all the rights to all of the, thing. They could have done whatever they wanted.
I've got a face for audio podcasting. So I got to ask you about going to Myanmar. I've wanted to go to Myanmar and I'm older now. I'm in my late 40s. I'm approaching 50. And when I was in my 20s, I went to Indonesia when this guy named Suharto was president. He'd been president for like 35 years, and the country was ready to break. It was almost ready to revolt or something. And my friend backed out on me, so I went by myself. And the reason I even bring that up is, like, at 20, I guess I was 21 or 22 when I did that. I was like, I don't know. I felt like I was living my life like a Hemingway novel or something. Now I'm scared to go to a place like that. Yeah. And Myanmar, I've canceled or changed plans because of the political situation in Myanmar.
Yeah.
Were you scared to go, or how did you arrange that when, like, 1 minute it's one government and the next a military coup is taking over?
Yeah. Growing up in Thailand, we had a lot of the same kind of things happen. The military came in, we had revolutions and coups. And we used to joke about the fact that while all our buddies back in the States were getting off for snow days, we were getting off for coup and military revolutions. And I'm not kidding, it'd be like third period and something over the loudspeaker would say, well, there's tanks in the streets and the government's being taken over. Everyone report to their buses and you're going home. And that would be it.
A coup day.
But we're a little bit familiar with that situation, but Myanmar is one of those things where you get caught up in a riot or a protest or something like that, and they start firing indiscriminately into a crowd, and you can be in a lot of trouble. Since that time, though, Myanmar, we always trust the locals. We always say if a local will do it, then we'll do it. And we really rely on that for the sensibilities. And since then, that was when we visited them, that was a State Department level 4 warning of do not go. And we filmed now in Myanmar. We did Mosul, Iraq, which was a level 4. We've did, lots of places that are, hard to get into.
Yeah.
And you can't hide. I mean, when you're, we travel with, eight to 10 people with Pelican.
You're already visible because of just like you've got camera equipment, all that kind of stuff. Also, we kind of stick out when some white guys from the South and in America or in Southeast Asia, we kind of stick out just by that virtue as well.
Yeah, I used to be the tallest kid on the bus unless my brother was there, and I'm only 5'10", so it's you stick out both because your height, because the way you look. And Myanmar is not a place where you get a lot of visitors. It's changing a little bit there. But for us, it was always that. I mean, look, we couldn't replicate what Bourdain was doing. He was our muse, and we couldn't, we couldn't be as cool as some of the other kids. So we said, let's lean into that, which we do well, which is go to sketchy places. So we always say we travel so you don't have to.
Yeah, I was gonna like work in something towards the closing, like, hey, you know, do your next one here in Yamaguchi, Japan. But this is like the least sketchy place. This is so safe here. It's ridiculous.
I want to go to Japan so bad. In high school, we used to play against American school in Japan. So we'd play against ASIJA and we'd travel there.
Yeah.
And so I've been a lot, but Japan, I think, is also fascinating. It doesn't have to be scary. You know, it could be interesting. There's a bluegrass band that we ran into out of Kyoto, and we're really interested in doing a whole thing on it. And you just don't, another one of those things that you, whatever you thought you knew about bluegrass, when you got like these 60-year-old guys that have been playing bluegrass hardcore in the States at some of the biggest festivals for 40-something years, you're like, all right, what is this thing bluegrass anyway? You know, yeah. You get these existential questions about everything, and I love that.
That's awesome. Well, if you and Craig do make it over here, you got a place to stay in Yamaguchi, man. We got an extra tatami room and a futon we can roll out. Have you, talking about the scary places though, have you ever, and it doesn't have to be someplace that was political unrest. It could just be you went to Morocco and you know, somebody was, you felt like you were going to be robbed or something. What's the scariest or most dangerous thing you've been in?
Some days call for some oomph to amplify your everyday look. Like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll also look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
There's a great episode that we did on season one with, which is called Light of the Village. And it's about a town right outside of Mobile, Alabama, near, you know, the great state of Alabama called Pritchard.
Yeah.
And this, and I didn't want to do any stories in the U.S. at all, but there was a friend of Craig's who had been writing some books about gang violence, and he had just come back, and he's like, dude, I know you guys been to Mogadishu and all these other places. Alabama Village, right outside of Mobile, is the most dangerous census tract in all of the state. There's most killings and whatever. Wow. And this area, the city no longer goes into this area, and so it's overgrown. And so whatever you think you thought about America, this little town is a place you've never heard of. We went and what I loved about the story, what caught my attention was, is oftentimes philanthropy or charity kind of goes down a color spectrum. It's the white people giving to the dark people, and it just follows this linear thing that I kind of hate.
Sure.
In this case, these were the poorest people that were taking, these kids were going to mission trips in Mexico, and they were building houses, and these kids had nothing. Yeah. And they grew up in this one little, you know, after school faith-based program called Light of the Village. And that program had lost 30-something kids in their program that had been shot and killed by people that they knew in that neighborhood. Yeah. We went down there and our eyes were open. And that really was every single day that we were filming, we heard gunshots. And there's a great segment in that episode where Craig is sitting down and interviewing this really great guy, Decino Diz. And Craig's like, what's going on? Because another boy had just been killed, and the kids slept through the shooting, even though it happened inside of their house. And so he's like, how does this happen? And he's like, look, you just get used to it. It's white noise at some point. And as soon as Decino said that, then gunshots go off. And Craig, who has no poker face at all, was like, dude, this literally happens all the time. And it wasn't like cue the gunshots, you know, so that was scary. Alabama was one of those scary places. But I think one of the places that we almost got killed, smushed literally, was we were filming the world's largest elephant in Chulu Hills in Amboseli Park in Kenya. And and the world's largest elephant at the time was a big tusker called Tim. His name was Tim. I think there's a Monty Python joke in there somewhere. Yeah. And So anyway, so we get there and it's like this huge guy, Craig Miller, and then me and Craig and our Kramer crew behind us. And we're supposed to just go single file up to the cage. And he's like, you can get, he says this on camera, we can get closer if we want. Of course, we're film guys. We have no idea what we're doing. So we're like, yeah, let's get closer. As soon as he does, him, the big Tusker, and then Tolstoy, which was the top 10 Tusker beside him, and another young bull turn, ears go out. They, you know, they trumpet and they start to head for us. And we're only 20 meters away from them. And it was the scariest thing. And I thought, you know what? That's the end of our show before we even get started. That's it.
That's the end of your life, man. Wow.
But that's the way to go, right? I mean, my kids would be proud. My dad got smushed in Kenya by an elephant.
That's true.
Dude, that's better than going dying in your bed, you know, at 80.
Well, I had joked with somebody the other day. I'm like, I had sneezed. Like I told you earlier, I feel like I'm getting older. I'm like 48 this year, I think. And I think I can't see. I'm forgetting how old I am these days. And like I sneezed the other day and like I pulled something on my neck and I'm like, is that what's going to actually get me in the end? Is it going to be just something silly and dumb like that? Like a sneeze or something? So I guess I would rather go out by Kenyan elephant.
Yeah, or something. You know, I mean, I've always told, you know, all of our crew, it's like, just don't bore me. I mean, I don't care what you do, and you can make mistakes, but just make them interesting. And that's all. So that's almost my mantra. It's just like, you know, just don't bore me.
Well, I have listened to your TEDx talk where, you know, you talk about the wisdom of ramen, that, you know, that you and Craig are the noodles, and that, you know, the spice.
Yeah.
And you talk about using that sort of as inspiration for creativity, that, you know, you can add anything to ramen. And it can be tasty or it can be horrible. And if it's horrible, you learned what doesn't work and so forth.
Yeah.
My question is, like, how do you find the next story? How do you find, you know, how do you keep going?
I think I'm like you or anybody. It's I like a twist. You know, I like that in my jokes. I like that in my, you know, my movies. I like that in anywhere. And so if I can find something that just surprised me in the storytelling, then that becomes for me super interesting about what is it? Why is that so weird? And why am I so interested in it? So we go to Thailand. We're going back to a place that both Craig and I grew up with. We speak Thai and we've been there a million years. And I always say that you only know a place in the first 5 minutes or after 50 years. Because you stop seeing all the monks and all the tuk-tuks and all the temples and things like that. But we wanted to tell a story about Buddhism and what this communal kind of thing is. And so we found this monk to interview, and he's 6'2". So that's already unheard of.
Yes, especially
there.
But
he's from Liverpool, England. He's a white guy. Speaks with a British accent. He's got this wry sense of humor. And I thought, this is perfect. Now, this doesn't represent every Thai Buddhist, but he's the one that says, all right, whatever you thought you knew about Buddhism or being a monk, all of a sudden you got to rethink it. And so we always look for that. And that's the same way with this idea of the wisdom of ramen. It's what you do to put in. It's that spice. It's those things that you've never thought of before that you're like, this ramen is more than I ever thought. And the Japanese are great at it. They come up with the most bizarre everything, first of all, everything, but ramen included.
That's why I'm here, man.
that's what I love about. I love about that kind of curiosity, and I love about art, and I love about, you know, any experimental kind of performances and things like that. I love being surprised, and it goes back to this, you know, just don't bore me.
Yeah.
Make it interesting.
Well, Earl, with the time we have left, I try to do a segment in a lot of episodes called 5 Minute Zen, where I just give the listener something to think about that they might apply to their lives on a practical level. So I said in the intro that you and Craig introduce audiences to inspiring folks who look at the world's most impossibly hard problems with the attitude, hey, I can help. I think a lot of people who might be listening to this show, at least, are the type that want to help, but they want to embrace the mentality, hey, I can help. I want to help too. What's your 2 yen on that, on how the every man, the every woman who might be listening can help in the world?
You know, I think I think most people are empathic. You see somebody else and you know, if they're crying, it's hard not to cry. And if they're struggling, it's hard not to identify with that. And if they're happy, that's the other part of it.
Yeah.
And so when you think about doing, you know, being helpful, I think the biggest thing I've learned is that while the feelings that we have may be the same, that the way that those things need to be solved, the good in the world that needs to be done, oftentimes is better served by asking them and not yourself, because you project an awful lot of what you feel like the solutions are onto a situation that you may never know what's going on. And that's not only cross-cultural. That's inside of Charleston, South Carolina. Yeah. And so I always say, if you can sit and get to know the person, the situation, the cause, the more that you can do on that, then the more that you can be really helpful as delivering kind of assistance to somebody on the other side. Because we as humans, oftentimes as Americans, we use shorthand and we said, you know, this is what needs to be done. And we rush into a solution that may not have anything to do with what really needs to be, you know, needs to happen.
Yeah, I've talked on I won't digress too far on this topic, but I've talked before about the nuanced difference between the golden rule in Christianity versus because I grew up Southern Baptist as well. I mean,
you're not going to heaven either. I'm sorry.
I didn't. Well, I'm aware. But, you know, I didn't have much choice. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. But the nuanced difference between the golden rule, you know, people say, oh, the golden rule exists in all religious traditions. And it does in some forms, but there are kind of nuanced differences. And one is that in Christianity, there's this do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And in Buddhism, it's kind of a don't do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. You know, it's a little bit more passive, I would say, whereas the Christian version is kind of proactive. Like, let me do this because I think that that's what they need or what they want, you know? And go ahead.
I love that. I love that, you know, where it's almost the mirror image or the negative of what we think, you know, the opposite, the film negative.
Well, Earl, what's next? What do you got going on? How can people find you?
I come back from Cuba. I spent 5 days in Cuba, and I love this because I'm going to go with this group. My partner, Autumn Phillips, is this just one journalist of the year in this travel writing thing. And so she teaches people how to travel and understand it through writing. So I'm looking forward to that. And then right after, I'm going to jump on my 2023 Triumph Bonneville T120 and ride to every single state in America. Awesome. And I call it my going crazy tour. But the point of it was, and again, this is oversharing probably, when things got really difficult for me, 2023 and 22 were really difficult years for me. There were periods that it was super dark for me. And I was like, you know what? If I'm going to off myself, I'm going to off myself on a motorcycle. And then that explains it to my kids that at least, you know, and all of us as entrepreneurs and creatives struggle with these things. But for me, it was when I got on, when I bought my bike and I got on the bike, I was never better. And this wind therapy happened. So for me, it was like, what is this thing that's going on inside of my brain? So I'm going to jump on my bike. I'm going to travel around. I'm going to go to places in, like I said, crazy name cities in every state. So I'm going to go, why not North Carolina, to Climax, North Carolina, to Tight Squeeze, Virginia, to Little Heaven, Delaware, and Intercourse and Blue Ball, Pennsylvania, before I get to Buttsville and Gaylordsville. And there's a Rough and Ready, and there's a Hell, Michigan. Anyway, so I'm going to hit these things. So if you get a chance, you could check it out as I go through Keister, Minnesota to, you know, whatever. There's actually a place called Dick Shooter, Idaho. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to film this along the way, and we're going to have some fun with it. And what does it mean mental health? And so I'll do that in concert with Triumph the Brand and in support of Movember Foundation. And I'll end up in Atlanta on May 19th and ride with the Triumph guys on what they call the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, which is this dress up in retro tweeds, have your little mustaches and your leather helmets, and then do some fun fundraising. So it's always that. Have some fun. Don't fucking bore me. And let's do some good.
That is awesome, man. Well, if you survive, then I'll have you back on. We'll talk about that, man. That's terrific.
Yes. There's a large number of things that could go wrong already. I know in this thing. I only got 45 days to do it. I'll leave here April 1st in Charleston. Wow. But follow, if you would, on the YouTube channel, The Good Road TV YouTube channel. And also, I'm going to try to post as much as I can all along that whole thing and take you to some interesting places. And I call it going crazy because, look, it's this conversation about mental health. But I don't want it to be so heavy. I just want it to open up.
Well, I will link the YouTube channel on the show notes on this. And
awesome.
I assume that that Triumph bike is not like a Goldwing. It's not like a, this is not a touring bike, right?
It's a retro black, you know, bobber kind of like trimmed down with almost nothing on there. And
you've thought about you're going to do this distance on that kind of bike.
And right? I'm not young, man. I'm 58, you know, so I figure if not now, when, right? Well, I mean, I'm not going to wait until my 60s to start, you know, doing some big stuff. I'm doing it when I'm right now. So
there you go. I love it. That's
on the bike, you go crazy.
There you go. That is the spirit of this episode right there. Well, folks, go check out The Good Road on YouTube. You got a site, earlbridges.com, right?
Yep, earlbridges.com, and Good All Over is our other site, goodallover.tv. But really what we're, most of the stuff that we're releasing is either Instagram, Facebook, but the YouTube is where all the cool stuff's happening.
Okay. Well, I will definitely link that. And so go do that first, folks. And then when you're done with that, go over to zensamich.com and help out the show. You know, I'm like the independent version of PBS or NPR. This is my pledge drive right here. So just throw us $5 if you got it. Keeps the lights on. Earl, you know, I've been waiting for this interview. I'm glad you squeezed me in between countries and trips, and you didn't disappoint, man. I could have talked to you for 5 hours. Thank you so much.
I love it. I love the whole concept of your podcast. I appreciate you giving me a chance to be on.
Hey there, Sandwich Society. If you enjoyed this episode, Zen Sandwich is a listener-supported podcast, and we sure could use all the help we can get. Even just a fiver is appreciated. Go to zensandwich.com, and you could do a direct donation through PayPal or become a monthly supporter through Patreon. Either way, it makes my day, and it keeps the lights on for the show. As always, thanks for listening, and breathe. Don't forget to breathe.